How blessed are they who, fearing God, from sin restrain their feet, who will not with the wicked stand, who shun the scorner's seat.
Welcome to Conversions to Christ, a podcast about coming to the Lord Jesus Christ. I'm your host, Jeff Smith.
Meditate upon that word with gladness day and night.
Well, my guest today is Dana Whistler. Dana, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, Jeff. Good to be here.
I have been explaining these. These are still kind of new. I've been explaining them by saying that we're talking about conversions to Christ, and we know that the book of Acts tells us how we come. It's a standardized way to come. As we compile all the different conversions in Acts, we see what we're supposed to do. But the individual stories, when we get convicted, who were the agents that got through to us, and how old were we, and where were we, and all those details, I think, are fascinating. And that's what we're getting at in these, with the hopes of inspiring or motivating folks who are already saved to go say, hey, I could do that and reach out to somebody, or hopefully inspire the lost to say, hey, he came, I could do that too.
Yeah.
And the reason I'm talking to you today specifically is in the second episode, I talked with John Pollard, who I don't know very well, but as he was telling his story, he talked about how he came to the Lord, how his mom came to the Lord, and how his dad came to the Lord. And your name came up in every one of those. I thought I would just kind of follow that up.
How I got to Belize is, that's a different story too.
True. Well, I'm talking from Haymarket, Virginia today. Where are you located?
Well, I am in Pennsylvania, in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. I'm working with my son this week. So yeah, I normally live in Salem, West Virginia.
And how long have you been in Salem?
Been about 4 or 5 years. Yeah.
Well, I think you're a little younger than me, but we're both of the age where you can start making stuff up now. That's okay.
Yeah. I'll be 63 here in a few days. Yeah.
Okay. I'm 63. I'll be 64 in December. So we're pretty close. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Don't let the facts get in the way of a good story, though. That's
yeah.
Tell me a little bit about Dana. Before you came to the Lord?
Well, I think what really made me serious about God in general was the fact that at about 15, I was in 10th grade. I was rushing between the cars and the buses at school. And I didn't make it.
Really?
Both of my legs busted. The one was about tore off.
No.
My teachers, who always jokes, run down there, and I've got my face in the dirt because I knew not to move. And he runs down there and says, "Is he dead? Is he dead?" And I thought he was joking at first. And then I realized he wasn't joking. I was bleeding profusely.
Are you saying, Dana, that the buses hit you, or did the bus run over you?
No, the cars go this way, the buses go this way, and I was running between them. So I actually got hit by a car.
Yikes.
But I think that's really what made me think seriously about life in general was that. And it was sometime after that I prayed to God at that time, and I told God I would straighten up because I was getting into some things I shouldn't have been getting into at that time in my life. And I prayed to God that if he got me out of this, that I would do better. I don't know exactly what I said, but
that's a near-death experience you had, right?
Oh, yeah. 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 It certainly, I mean, it was a bad time in my life in the sense that I could have got into a lot of really bad things. And that stopped me cold for 9 months. I had that one cast on my leg and two casts for 3 months. So that made me start thinking real serious about life. I was worshiping in the First Church of God, which is a lot like a Baptist at the time. My family worshiped there. It was sometime after that that I gave my life to Jesus, as they would put it, and I thought I was saved. Then I knew you're supposed to know what the Bible says, so I started reading the Bible. It was interesting because baptism just stuck out. I don't know where, except for that's what hit me first, was I look at all these passages on baptism in the New Testament, and so I start writing them down. Well, then I took them to the preacher, and I asked him about them. He said, oh, don't worry about that. We do that once every 6 months. Well, at that point, I said, okay, obviously, I don't understand this. So I quit reading, but I knew you were to pray for wisdom. So I prayed. Less than 2 years, my cousin started teaching at a small church, preaching at a small church, and he asked me if I wanted to go along with him. And I said, well, sure. And so we would go over there, and it was just amazing to me because he would speak from the Bible and I could understand it. And that was just great. I thought, wow, I can understand it just like anybody else. But I don't remember him ever mentioning baptism. Now, maybe that was just me. I don't know. But I invited him to come to the First Church of God to the youth group meeting. He came there. I guess he figured I've got one shot at this. And so, I mean, he just started about talking about faith and about how we're converted to Christ. And of course, he was talking about baptism in no uncertain terms, being for the forgiveness of sins and that kind of thing. And I'm sitting there saying, oh, yeah, I've seen that before. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. It, you know, and everybody else is sitting there saying, oh, no, that's wrong. And so by that time, I had been baptized according to the First Church of God doctrine. It took me till 1 o'clock the next morning till I realized that, okay, that baptism had been corrupted by the commandments and traditions of men. And so that really wasn't the baptism that we see in the pages of the New Testament. So I was baptized into Christ about 1 or 1:30. Yeah, that night.
So that means you were a junior in high school. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, by that time, yeah. No, I was a senior.
Senior in high school. And yeah. Geographically, where was this happening?
Shippensburg, Pennsylvania.
Oh, Shippensburg. All right. So yeah. The relative of yours that had been preaching was kind of aiming at the church that you invited him to, but you heard it and it resonated with you.
Yeah. Well, he was, like I said, it was the First Church of God. Yeah. And, you know, I'm sure he just figured, well, I've got one opportunity here. And so he just did like Peter did on the day of Pentecost and just told them what they needed to do today. And uh-huh. Yeah, but it was, to me, it was like, I've already read this. I mean, this is the stuff I looked at, and that I hadn't really maybe got to that conclusion yet. That he put on it, but I knew it was like real important. It's hard to get past it being real important. And of course I had all that false doctrine in my head at that time. So it was like, I didn't understand it real well, but whenever he taught it, it was like, oh yeah, that's exactly what it says. Yeah. And guess what? It means what it says. It was great for me, but it was just like a lot of other things that he had said. I was looking at it and saying, yeah, well, that's the way I read it too, you know? And so sometime along my Christian walk, I have just always remembered Jesus' words, the blind shall lead the blind, and they both shall fall in the pit. And that's really the way I felt like I was just somebody that was blind and I was being led by the blind leaders. And yeah, so I remember one time I had to have a pin taken out of my leg when I lived in Belize. And that pin from the accident, 30 years later, I had to have it taken out when I was in Belize. And the Seventh-day Adventist doctor was a little surprised about how many questions I was asking him about his qualifications for taking that pin out of my leg. And and I said, listen, Jesus said the blind shall lead the blind, they both shall fall in the pit. I just apply that across the board. So yeah. But he got a chuckle. But yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting.
You think that's so important for people to remember that. That's Jesus' words. And he was talking about their well-respected religious leaders, and we need to be careful.
After the accident, maybe during the recovery, you were reading the Bible, but then you stopped. And then did you start again? And had yes. you been reading it for a while? But
not when my cousin came along. No, that was a year and a half. I was praying. I wasn't reading. I looked at it as if, well, obviously I'm too stupid to understand exactly what it says, because I saw one thing with baptism and the preacher was telling me, oh, don't worry about that. We'll do it once every 6 months. Well, that's not the picture. I don't remember exactly what I saw, exactly what I was seeing there. But whatever I was seeing was completely different than what the preacher was telling me was there in the First Church of God. Yeah.
So you kind of trusted him.
Sure.
And kind of shut down your own efforts.
Exactly.
I imagine a lot of folks do that.
And it's sad because of Jesus' words, the blind shall lead the blind, they both shall fall in the pit. If you just read the book of Matthew, you'd realize their well-respected religious leaders didn't know what they were talking about. And if you just blindly followed them, you would fall in the same pit they did. It's one of those things that should be basic about Jesus, but about knowing Jesus. I spend some time on college campuses talking to young people. A lot of times they'll be religious, and I'll ask them about that passage there in Matthew 15:14. And sometimes they're surprised that it's there. But if I ask them, what does it mean? I have never gotten a good answer from that.
Really?
Yes.
It's a pretty basic idea.
It is. And it's so fundamental to following Jesus. If you're going to follow Jesus, you got to weed out following everybody else. But Jesus made it so perfectly clear. That's the thing. You can't be following somebody else.
With one exception, I've got one exception I have to tell you. My good brother from up in Denver, PA, Joe Manganiello, I talked with him on the third episode. Whenever we would drive down to Philadelphia, he, though blind, was my guide. And he would tell me, turn here, turn here. And he knew where he was going. I don't say, but I would think about that verse and I was a little skeptical, I should not be listening to a blind guide, but I am. And it worked out for me. So, okay. But I'm really spooky.
Yeah.
Don't listen to a blind guide. So,
yeah.
And you're kind of saying that principle doesn't just apply to religious teaching. It's a general, it applies to doctors who are taking pins out too.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
And you use that sometimes to get started talking to folks on college campuses.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, it's one of those things that I think people need to know about Jesus. And it's so unknown, that passage. And the follow-up passage would be in chapter 23, where you realize those people are that Jesus is saying are hypocrites, and that they're blind guides to the blind. They're the people that everybody else is respecting. Even Jesus' own disciples were surprised there in Matthew 15 that Jesus Jesus had offended them.
Right.
And you know, and so people respected these people. It wasn't they weren't respected. Jesus didn't respect them. And we need to be careful. The religious leaders. Yeah.
I think sometimes of Paul's letter to the Thessalonians, the second one, and saying how you've got to have a love of the truth if you want to be saved. And I think part of that love of the truth is to love the truth more than, you know, you respect that blind guide, or the, at least have the possibility that that guide could be wrong. And then let's check it out. It sounded, though, also like you said that, well, I guess when you first got the idea that baptism was important, it hadn't stuck well enough. You weren't sure enough to discount the preacher that you were working with. But then later, when you heard it preached correctly, then it stuck. Because because you've been studying the Bible on your own.
By that time, and I can't remember real good, but by that time I was figuring out that I could understand it for myself. And of course, that's exactly what Jesus expects from us.
You mentioned that you could understand when your cousin was preaching, but that he hadn't mentioned baptism in his sermons. It hadn't come up. Is that right?
Which is very strange. And, you know, I don't understand that, but he was a young fellow. And but I don't remember him once mentioning that baptism was necessary. And maybe it was simply that he didn't dwell on it, and so somehow I didn't catch it. I don't remember. All I remember is whenever it came to that night at the youth group meeting, he spelled it out real clear, real plain, and in no uncertain terms. For me, it was like the light bulb went off, and it's like, yeah, I know that. I've seen that before, you know, and guess what? I wasn't wrong after all. But yeah, and then I started to realize that the preachers were wrong.
Did that result in a break with that church that you'd been worshiping?
Well,
with?
And not right away, because, you know, I didn't understand everything I needed to do whenever I became a Christian. So it was, I'm going to say, a few months that I was there, and you know, I figured I needed to try to make a difference there. So I stayed there and tried to do that. And up until that point, I was thought to be a really good kid. But after I started trying to tell people that they needed to be baptized for the forgiveness of their sins, like Peter said in Acts 2, I went from being a pretty good kid to kind of being a nut, I think. But anyhow, that didn't work out real well in the end. I tried.
So you actually started to advocate for that truth and received a real pushback, or maybe maybe it wasn't even someone refuting your teaching, but just kind of making you feel bad about saying it.
I don't remember anybody actually refuting it.
Well, that's tough. That's a tough thing to go through as a young man, a senior in high school. I mean, it's tough to have to make a stand with people who I'm sure were older than you.
I had friends there and such, but that was kind of hard, but it seemed like the right thing to do. Tried to make a difference.
So where did you wind up going to worship after that?
Well, I ended up at the Church of Christ. I ended up at the Church of Christ in Chambersburg, Pennsylvania. Yeah.
Chambersburg.
Yes. Okay.
Was there no Church of Christ where you were living?
Well, there actually was, but I didn't know about it.
Oh, okay.
There actually was one in Shippensburg, but my cousin was connected with brethren that I now disagree with, they had a church in Carlisle and a church in Chambersburg. So those were the ones I knew about. And the other one in Shippensburg, I eventually found out they would call them the Antis.
Oh.
And so I didn't know what that meant.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't pay much attention at the time, really.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That came along later when I realized that, oh, well, there are some important things in the scriptures, more that I needed to know that my cousin didn't know. Yeah.
Well, how did that come up? How did you get?
Well, that was actually, that didn't come, that's a pretty wild story. I was actually with my wife by that time when we were first married. We went to visit her family in Maine, and we went to a Church of Christ there. We almost ended up at the Mormon Church because they say Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. But then we found a little Church of Christ there, and so we went there, and someone invited us to eat with them. And the preacher stopped by. I think they had it all planned.
Oh.
Which was great for us. We love the truth. So he said he could tell that maybe we needed some more teaching.
Really? This
Robert Rafe. He started to tell us about some things that we needed to understand more accurately the Word of God. And so we heard these things, and they made pretty good sense. We weren't specifically convinced, I guess, but then we tried to visit the church where he suggested we visit. And they found out we were from the Chambersburg congregation, and they didn't do much with us. and so he came from Maine. He was visiting Ohio. He came around and took us to this other church, the Shippensburg Church. And he was very bold in telling them, these people would like to worship here, and you need to study with them.
So, really?
Yeah, he was very good. We were very impressed with him because, you know, he didn't know us. He just wanted to look out for us, and so we did. We studied. And one of the things that really made us sit up and listen was there was a preacher that we respected very much, that in what I refer to as my institutional brethren, that they believe in doing things with institutions that the church should do. But anyhow, we respected this man, and we went to ask him questions about these differences, and he didn't want to deal with it. And that really threw up a red flag to me and my wife both. And it's like, wait a second, he would deal with anything, anywhere, anytime. And now we've got this, and he doesn't want to deal with it. And that really made us suspicious. And so then we did finally get men from both the Chambersburg Church and the Shippensburg Church to meet together and hash out some of these things. But it became evident to us that there was some truth that they weren't willing to accept. And so that's when we started to worship at the church in Shippensburg.
So it was a kind of a chance meeting in Maine, and a fellow being very direct and saying, you need to learn some issues where, you know, what the Bible says about some
sort of things. Oh, yeah. Robert Rafe is nothing if he's not bold and direct. And And we love him for it.
Yeah. And I
appreciated him so much for helping us in that.
Now, I don't know of Robert, but I've heard of a David Rafe.
His son.
That's his son. Okay. And is Robert still living? Do you know? Is he still?
Yeah, he's in Texas.
In Texas.
I think that's where he was originally from.
When you heard these issues that you really hadn't considered much before, you were like the Bereans. You received it with all readiness of mind, but then searched the scriptures to see whether those things were so. And it connected.
Yeah. I mean, we had thought there was things that made us uneasy that the church did, but then whenever we saw the scriptures about it, that kind of helped convince us that there were problems.
And that's the way it should be, I guess. And it sounds like you've had to deal with folks disagreeing with you about the scriptures quite a bit.
Yeah, I have. Yeah, that's for sure. That seems to be standard as you look at the New Testament.
But, you know, I think in the parable of the sower, the four different things that can happen. The second one is when trials arise and there's some sort of difficulty. And that is a situation that causes a lot of folks to just say, well, thanks. I'm not going to play, you know, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to stand.
Yeah. And that's really sad. I mean, considering what Jesus went through for us and what we see in the New Testament Christians and what they went through. And, you know, I think about the Apostle Paul and even dealing with the Corinthians. And I think, you know, they were a messed up church. And yet, you know, he calls them brethren and, you know, and he helps them get through the problems.
Yeah.
Problems should not turn us away from the truth in Jesus Christ.
Yeah. And not being discouraged by conflict when it arises, but having the confidence to advocate for the scriptural position, whatever it is, no matter who's telling you it doesn't say that. Refusing to talk about it.
You see a lot of controversy because people believe there is such a thing as truth. You know, whereas I think in the religious world or in the world in general, I think that people have bought into the idea that that nobody really knows what the truth is and there's no way of finding it out.
That thing that we call postmodernism, where, you know, you've got your truth, I've got mine. And
exactly. Not the picture you get reading the. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that. Tell me, though, you did allude to the story of how you got to Belize being an interesting story.
Yeah, well, I was preaching at the church in Shippensburg at the time. I preached there for about 6 years.
Well, just before we go on with this part then, give me some. So just timing wise, you said, how old were you when you started preaching?
33.
And you'd been preaching in Shippensburg for 6 years. So now we're, what, 30, 39?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so anyhow, this fellow online, I didn't know him, Jesse Hightower was his name, but he was online and saying that you could go and study with people and he needed preachers to come there to Belize and to study with people and that kind of thing. And that was one of the things I had always tried to do in my preaching, but is to get personal studies with people. Somewhere along the line, Ricky Shanks has been very instrumental in that. And can't remember the time, but before I started preaching so that I would be better at helping others to come to Christ. But as a matter of fact, he taught a lesson called the Nathan Principle. and using some of the wisdom that we see with Nathan in dealing with others. And that was how I was able to teach my parents the truth about Jesus Christ. So that was in the time I was preaching at Shippensburg. But now we'll go back to how did I get to Belize?
Okay.
Jesse Hightower had said that about these opportunities. Well, I didn't want it to look like I was just taking time off or something. So anyway, I had arranged with him that I would stay for a month whenever I went there.
Okay.
So I went there for a month to basically to do personal studies. At the end of that month, Jesse said, you know, I'm leaving here. I need to go to Guatemala and learn Spanish. He said, but I've asked other people and nobody come here. At the time, it looked like somebody really ought to be there. I'd never been on a plane in my life till I went to Belize, but I was very intrigued about the opportunities to actually speak to people about the truth. I now had to deal with the guilt, I guess.
Oh.
That, you know, nobody's going to be there and nobody's coming there. And there are people that need somebody to help them to know the truth, and they need people to help this young church along, which had about 70 people at the time. I had preached a sermon about David. You know, David's the guy who has faith and trust in the Lord. And, you know, whenever there's a problem, David's the one who takes care of it because he's the guy who has faith. Well, now I either had to put that into practice, in my mind at least. I either had to put that into practice or quit preaching it, which wouldn't have changed the truth about the matter anyway. But
right.
Anyway, yeah. So that's really what got me to Belize, is I saw something. It's what got me preaching in the first place. I mean, I'm not a natural. I'm not. I know so many of my brethren that preach and they got what I call big brains.
Oh,
yeah, and I'm not one of those people, and so I just simply wasn't a natural. But in the Northeast at the time, there didn't seem to be too many preachers that I knew of around there preaching the truth. So I thought, well, there needs to be more. So that's what I need to do.
Uh-huh.
And the same thing got me to Belize, really, is that I saw the opportunity and decided, well, you need to do this. And it's kind of at a bad time. I had two children who were about to graduate high school, even though my wife homeschooled. We had a group that we were in and stuff. So anyhow, it came at a bad time for my family. At least a lot of people would say it was a bad time. But we packed up and went to Belize in a school bus, an old school bus.
Really?
Because that's what Jesse Hightower suggested, and I had no idea. I didn't know what to do, you know.
Uh-huh.
Done such a thing, but anyhow, that was his suggestion, and so I got my bus driving license and took all the seats out of this old bus and put all our junk in it. He said, bring whatever, and so I packed it full of what we had, and we left Pennsylvania and went through Mexico to Belize. Larry Payton heard about us doing that, and he could speak Spanish, and we didn't speak a bit of Spanish. Well, I shouldn't say that. My wife took Spanish in school, but Larry offered to come along with us. So yeah, we made that trip down through Mexico to Belize.
Did Larry just go along to help you get there just for the trip part?
Yeah.
Isn't that something? What an adventure.
It
That's
was.
an amazing story.
Yeah, we pulled out and we didn't get like 60 miles till the brakes lit on fire.
No.
Yeah. And then we had, on the way to Mexico, we had two tires blow out. And yeah, but luckily, none of that stuff happened in Mexico. So yeah, I towed a car down there as well.
A bus towing a car?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep. Boy, if you have any pictures of that, I need some pictures. That's amazing.
Yeah. And then when I got the car there, somebody said, "Would you bring this old thing, old junk down here?" But yeah.
What a story. And what year was that you went to Belize?
98, I believe.
I know we came down and were working there just one time. I think it was 2004, I think, was when we came down and saw you there. Greg Whipple. A little to the north.
But, yeah.
That's amazing. Well, and we just, I mean, the thing that got me to call you or visit with you today was the amazing success you had with the Pollard family while you were there.
They are special people. I have, and you talked to John Arthur, as we call him. His father, John Sr., he was very, very skeptical of me at first, as you had already heard, but he, he, one time I went to a wedding of one of his other children, and he got up and told everybody, I mean, there's this crowd of people I don't know from anybody.
Mm-hmm.
He thanked me so much for saving his marriage.
Really? And
it was so emotional. I mean, because I didn't realize God saved his marriage, I guess, really. But
God needs people now to act in his behalf. And so it's kind of unusual for a man to gush like that in a situation.
And you got to know John. He's quite the, he's nobody's pushover. Yeah. And that was before he became a Christian.
Really?
Yeah. That long before he became a Christian. He worshiped with us for many years before he became a Christian, but he had a lot of hard choices. I mean, and you got to appreciate this guy. I mean, he had one of the few good jobs in Belize, and he knew if he became a Christian, that it was a political job.
Oh,
he knew that he couldn't do that job. You know, when you talk about somebody that's got the right heart, that's somebody I can look at. And he knew what he was given, what it cost him. He had to count the cost, mm-hmm. and he was willing to pay the price. Yeah.
Yeah. He knew beforehand.
Him and his wife, they were selling cookies to make a living. The last time I knew. Yeah. I mean, they're great people.
That's amazing. Wow.
Yeah. And Sharon, his mother, she's a great lady, good friend of my wife's.
Well, and that was something that John said as well, was that as we were talking about the influence that you had, impact you had on that family, he said, and this is, there's quite an impact that Dana's wife, is it Carolyn? Is that?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Carolyn had as well. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's pretty great.
And the reality is my wife is the positive one in the family. So
she's the positive one.
Oh, yeah. She's the one that, I mean, I called her from Belize and I'm telling her about all the experiences there and everything. And she said to me at one point, she says, "Yeah, I just put the house on the market."
Really?
Yeah. So yeah.
She knew what the right thing was to do, but that's amazing that she did that. She knew where you guys were going.
Yeah. Well, I was a little shocked.
I guess so. Now, you say that she's the positive one. You're not like that preacher that the elders told him he needed to do a positive sermon for a change. And he thought about it. He said, well, I think I could do one. So he got up the next Sunday. He says, I'm supposed to be doing a positive sermon. So I want you to tell you that you're positively sinners and you're positively going to hell if you don't repent.
Yeah.
You're not that guy, are you?
Quite in that category.
No. All right. Okay. Just wanted to make sure.
No, but you got to understand my wife. When we were in Belize, we had 6 years. I had looked around and saw my brother suffering, and we were doing so good and everything for about the first 5 years we were in Belize. And, you know, I prayed to God, and because I knew that, you know, you're going to suffer as a Christian and stuff. And so I asked God in my prayers, I said, you know, why doesn't anything happen to me? Do you not care about me? We had 6 years of the people would look at us and say, I've never seen anybody have so many bad things happen. And so,
no, really?
Yeah. And it was really bad. I mean, and people would tell us we needed to come back to America and everything. And my wife, they'd say, well, a good friend of ours said we were abusing our children there.
Oh, that's so hard to deal with when somebody says that.
Yeah. But it was funny because my wife, the positive one, she says, well, four of us could have died and, you know, we're all still alive. So, yeah. But
that's amazing. Well, you're going to have to write a book about the Whistlers in Belize going down there and all that happened. It sounds like that's an episode in itself or a book, maybe.
Yeah, Bob Buchanan wanted to write one. but that never happened.
So just to recap, you read the scriptures on your own, but it took a while for it to really connect. That reminds me of me a little bit. I had read through the Bible, just a Bible reading plan, a couple of times and not put together what I needed to do, and still were trusting other people. So
yeah.
Do you know where your confidence that the Bible was the word of God and needed to be, you know, was suitable for answering all questions, where that confidence came?
You know, I don't know. It's just that I know I've tested it against everything I can find always.
Okay.
Especially at the beginning, I had made a note of the doctrines and the different denominations that I would put them in categories, and the Baptist types. Well, I had already dealt with that because of my own experience. But then, you know, I looked at the Roman Catholic Church, the Adventist while I was in Belize. I had looked at the Jehovah's Witnesses, Mormons. And I just, you know, it just always struck me how that the doctrines of men and stuff get into religion. And it seems it's so sad. People seem to want a real man to follow or something, or organization or whatever. That's kind of a sad thing. Again, when you look at the New Testament and see the Christians there. I mean, not that they didn't have that problem. Paul dealt with that problem already.
Well, sure, yeah.
First Corinthians. So, you know, I have tried and tested everything. I study with atheists and such. And so I've tried in my life to, I guess, to make sure that what I'm doing is according to the truth. And you mentioned Greg Whipple. And, you know, he was pretty much an atheist before he became a Christian. And he was a science teacher And so he was down in Belize helping me with preaching. Greg's influence, I think, there is another thing that certainly helps me. I remember Greg, one of the things that he would say is, you know, he basically had everything that people say you're supposed to have in life. And he kind of said, this is it.
you know,
it wasn't enough. And so that's what set him on the search.
There's got to be more than that, maybe.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And that's the thing I believe is true. And God gives us something more.
Well, Dana, thanks for sharing all this so freely. I really appreciate it. And
well, thanks for asking.
I really wanted to follow up after talking with John. And I had no idea there was going to be a bus with brakes on fire towing a car in the story. But you never know where it's going to lead.
Well, like I said, that was Jesse's idea.
It was Jesse. Who blamed Jesse for that one? That's so funny. All right, man. Well, thanks again, and God bless you.
Well, God bless you, and thanks for having me.
I'm glad you joined us for this episode of Conversions to Christ. If you have comments or questions, please send them to me at teachpreach@gmail.com. Come back again and join us. God bless.